The Optometry Talks podcast series is brought to you by Optometry New South Wales ACT, your peak professional body.
I'm Andrew McKinnon, CEO at Optometry New South Wales ACT, and we're coming to you live from the Canada Bay area in the heart of Sydney, the traditional lands of the Wangal people, whose elders past and present we acknowledge. In collaboration with the Optometry Council of New South Wales, today we're presenting a talk on how to be a better practitioner and avoid complaints against you. And we're joined by the Council's legal member, Catherine Gregory. Good morning, Catherine.
Hello, Andrew. Thanks for the introduction.
We'll be focusing on complaints in this talk, understanding the complaints process, how to protect yourself in the event of a complaint, and perhaps most importantly, how to avoid a complaint in the first place. Catherine, things run a little differently in New South Wales compared to other states when it comes to complaints. Can you tell us how it works with the Optometry Council of New South Wales?
Thanks, Andrew. Yes, of course. The Optometry Council of New South Wales handles complaints about an optometrist that can be made in a number of ways. The complaint may be made by a member of the public via ARPRA, the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency, or via the ACCC, the Healthcare Complaints Commission. Alternatively, the complaint about a practitioner may have been made directly to the Optometry Council of New South Wales. And as I mentioned, complaints can be made by a member of the public, but can also be made by an employer, other practitioners, self-notification, or by Medicare or a health fund, where there are appropriate concerns about the standard of care provided or the health or conduct of a practitioner.
So if a practitioner is selected for an audit of their compliance with the Optometry Board of Australia standards, it's quite different, isn't it? In this case, they would receive a notice of audit directly from ARPRA. Audits are random and look for things like CPD, professional indemnity insurance, recency of practice and criminal history.
Yes. Even though we look after complaints in New South Wales, the Optometry Council does not do audits, random or otherwise.
Okay. So for our listeners who might be confused about the various bodies and their functions, the Optometry Council is a regulatory body in place to protect the public in New South Wales. They work closely with the Healthcare Complaints Commission, the ACCC, and ARPRA to manage complaints about registered optometrists. This regulatory role is quite different to the role of Optometry Australia, which is the peak professional body for optometrists, to support them throughout their careers. By collaborating on education, we're working towards better outcomes for patients, the public, as well as optometrists. Catherine, can you walk us through what the complaints process actually looks like in New South Wales? How is it handled?
So a complaint against a practitioner can come in directly to the Optometry Council of New South Wales or via ARPRA or the ACCC. These organisations confer on how that complaint is to be managed or if it does not require action and can be closed. It may be that some elements are handled by us and some by the ACCC, or it may fall under the remit of one or the other to manage. As a general guide though, if the complaint involves patient health practitioner standard of care or conduct, the Optometry Council manage it. If it involves serious complaints about conduct, that may require disciplinary action and that is managed by the ACCC.
So Catherine, could you give us an example of the kind of practitioner conduct complaint that might be managed by the Healthcare Complaints Commission as opposed to that managed by your team at the Optometry Council?
A complaint of a serious nature where there may be a criminal conviction or a finding for things such as sexual harassment or assault or a physical violation of a patient is likely to be investigated and be handled by the ACCC, whereas a less serious conduct complaint about a practitioner may include unnecessary or delayed treatment of a patient, behaving rudely or making inappropriate comments to a patient, or general breaches of the code of conduct will be dealt with by council.
So there are some instances where the Optometry Council must take action for the protection of the health or safety of any person by imposing a suspension or conditions. Could you tell us a bit about when that might happen?
Where there are more serious concerns, the council may determine that the practitioner can only practice safely with certain restrictions on their practice. And it may impose practice conditions and other orders relevant to mitigate the risk to the public. Those conditions, unless they relate to a practitioner's health, are generally published on the National Register, which the public can access online. Where a practitioner has conditions or orders on their registration, the council is responsible for verifying the practitioner complies with the requirements of the conditions or orders. And this is what we call monitoring.
So can you talk us through the continuum that runs from prevention right through to suspension? What does a practitioner need to do to get suspended?
Yes, so the complaints management legislation applied by the council is protective of the public rather than punitive, and it aims to ensure that necessary action is taken, such as restrictions or, as I mentioned, conditions on a practitioner's registration. Complaints are managed on a case-by-case basis, and it would require a serious concern for the safety of the public for a practitioner to be suspended. Saying that, circumstances could arise which do ultimately result in a temporary suspension, such as serious complaints where the risk to the public must be urgently aborted. If a practitioner is already being monitored by the council and continues not to comply with their conditions, or if a practitioner attracts multiple complaints with escalating seriousness to the basis of the complaints, then this could also ultimately result in a temporary suspension being ordered by the council.
Okay, so Catherine, could I get you to summarise the most common complaints received by the Optometry Council regarding practitioners?
Absolutely. While there are very serious complaints around misdiagnosis and incomplete record keeping, the more common complaints revolve around over-servicing, unexpected costs and unmet expectations. Money and communication issues are often at the root of the complaint.
Look, I certainly agree with you on those, though I'd also add in underservicing as a less obvious one. This is where the patient is not provided with the services, referrals or devices that would give them the best outcome. The core issues around expectations and costs very often come down to communication. Our team here at Optometry New South Wales ACT recently canvassed a class of fourth year optometry students about their greatest source of anxiety in terms of transitioning to professional life, and the majority of the answers they submitted related to missing a diagnosis. Very few were worried about a complaint about new glasses. A serious misdiagnosis is rare and accounts for very few complaints. Most complaints involve, as you said, money. The cost was unexpected or too high, or perhaps a refund wasn't issued. Another common one is failure to obtain informed consent, for example, when dilating the pupils. Or it could be that the vision with new glasses is not meeting expectations, or a treatment was unsuccessful. It's also useful for listeners to know that complaints often involve multifocal glasses or children's vision. The association is obviously used to dealing with these complaints from the other side. We frequently support optometrists when they receive a complaint. When our member receives a notification from the Optometry Council or the HCCC that there is a complaint against them, they often make contact with us immediately for support when dealing with the complaint. So I think there's a couple of really important things that an optometrist can do to protect themselves. Firstly, keep excellent patient records. Communicate well and clearly with the patient, and avoid the complaint in the first place by having good practice protocols in place. So maybe we can look at those one at a time. Firstly, good patient records are gold. Our mantra is, if you haven't written it down, it didn't happen. The best defense against complaints is complete, accurate records, which would include the reason for the visit, the results of clinical tests performed, the reason for the omission of tests, a record of negative findings, the clinical basis for your diagnosis and treatment, the occupational basis for a particular lens recommendation, a record of advice and the recall period, and, as Catherine mentioned, informed consent for dilation and other similar procedures. The second point was on communication. What sort of things need to be communicated effectively? Good communication is so important, especially around out-of-pocket costs, reasons for recommendations, and full disclosure about ocular health and progressive conditions that may require future intervention. Regarding full disclosure, it's always important to advise the patient about your findings, even if referral is not necessary at the time. For example, you might detect an early cataract that doesn't require referral now. However, if you let the patient know what you found, they may wish to change their health insurance plan to include cataract surgery, which usually involves a waiting period of 6 months or more. If you only tell them when the referral is due, they've missed their chance to change their plan. It's respectful to keep your patient informed of your findings and what might eventuate over time. Catherine, have you come across any of these sorts of scenarios?
Yes, Andrew. With the more serious complaints on misdiagnoses or continuity of care, one of the first things the council will refer to is the records that will identify the appropriateness of the tests that were conducted, and also the diagnoses recorded and what was done about it. The council will question how it was followed up, was there a referral, were suitable notes recorded for subsequent practitioners? Those are the types of tasks the Optometry Council is often navigating.
So, rhetorical question, what about avoiding complaints in the first place? It sounds like the magic formula, but how do you go about it? After assisting members with complaints for years, there really are not that many variations. It's a bit like that theory that there are only seven different story plots. I think there's probably a similar number of different complaint categories. So if you know what they are and you can nip them in the bud, you're ahead. So firstly, let your patients know things in advance. Firstly, they won't get a shock, and secondly, they won't be in a position to say they weren't told. One of the obvious things to be clear on is costs. If you charge any out-of-pocket fees, make sure the patient knows about them before they even get to your practice. You definitely don't want someone finding out about costs when they get to the front desk after the consultation. Some practices send an email with their consultation costs, or if they bulk bill, they'll mention what additional tests may be performed on the day and how much they'll cost. In my experience, people don't cancel if they're told about costs in advance. So make sure you provide clear information on costs at the time of booking, on arrival, before doing any additional tests, and before ordering any devices. It's also very important to let them know about your refund policy on contact lenses, particularly ortho-K lenses. You should consider providing a printed document with this information about the treatment protocol, expected outcomes, and what your policy is if the treatment fails. This should include non-refundable clinical fees in the event of an unsuccessful outcome. And we strongly recommend the use of disclaimers signed by the patient in the case of repairs or lenses to own frame and similar procedures. Particularly in these circumstances, people can use your failure to provide warnings against you. You should have a template for the disclaimer, so you can just print it off and ask them to sign. Optometry New South Wales ACT is happy to help out with wording suggestions for these, so members can get in touch if they'd like some assistance. Issuing prescriptions is a tricky one that often comes up in complaints. It's important to remember, the patient just wants to see well. They're rarely out to trick the optometrist or take them for a ride, even if it can sometimes feel like that. The problem usually occurs when you separate prescribing and dispensing of glasses. It's always a risk when a patient gets a script from one practice and has it filled elsewhere. If it's a simple plus two single vision reader, it's rarely an issue. but if the script or the lenses are complex, it's all danger. For example, you prescribe a particular type of task glasses for a patient with eye strain. They take the script and the practice where they get the glasses doesn't offer that lens design and uses something else. The patient doesn't like the new glasses. So, who's at fault? It's really hard when you get a patient back who had a test with you but took their script elsewhere and now they're unhappy with the glasses and they blame you. So, here's the advice. First and foremost, you do have to provide a script if the patient asks for it. The minimum is your final refractive findings for distance and the near ad if applicable. You can include the pupillary distance, but it's worth noting if they take the script that the patient's PD may not be the same as the optical centration of their glasses. That depends on the script and what they've adjusted to. This is a dispensing measurement and not the same as refractive findings, so you might prefer to omit the measurement or add a cover note to cover yourself. Again, the association has a template that you can use. Importantly, don't just hand over a script without discussion. You do need to give it out, but it's important that the patient understands what you're issuing and how the warranty works if they get their glasses elsewhere. Prescribing and dispensing of glasses are very closely linked. You can find out more from the OBA's guidelines for the prescription of optical appliances on the OBA website. One other thing to be aware of is that the privacy laws mean you can't provide a patient's script to another provider without that patient's permission. This happens all the time. You get a call from the receptionist or dispenser at another practice regarding a script. You must check with the patient first before releasing it, even if it's verbally over the phone. And note this on the record. Never read out the script over the phone. This is a disaster in the making. You should always email it to the other practice so there is a clear record of what information you provided. Ensure the script includes a warranty statement. This says that your practice is not responsible for remakes unless the glasses are dispensed in your practice. It might include a statement to the effect that if you choose to purchase your eyewear elsewhere, your practice will only cover the cost of replacing lenses if a substantial or significant error is found in the prescription issued. New lenses to old frames is another really common one. We had a member call us just recently about a patient's existing Chanel frame that broke at the lab when they remade the lenses. They had verbally mentioned that new lenses to own frame was at the patient's risk, but nothing was signed. It's always good practice to get the patient to sign a waiver that they understand that there is a risk of their frame breaking and that if they choose to proceed, the practice is not responsible. So, Catherine, that's a very long-winded interlude. Before we finish, are there any take-home points for avoiding complaints? What would you advise?
I would have to say that self-reflection after consultations or examinations is very valuable. Another important prevention tool is keeping up with the necessary continuing education requirements and filling your knowledge gaps with ongoing training relevant to your own specific practice needs. Also, ensuring communication goes well with your patient, whether it is for costs or diagnosis, obtaining informed consent for treatment options or recommended follow-up treatment plans or consultations. Those will be key, I suppose, to the ongoing patient-practitioner relationship.
Catherine, thank you for that. I'd like to sum up by saying three things. Keep excellent records. Keep the patient informed of costs and changes in ocular health and have warranty statements readily available for when you give out scripts or remake lenses to own frames. Look, that might be a good place to leave it. Catherine, thank you for joining us today for this very valuable discussion.
Oh, thanks, Andrew, for connecting and collaborating with us on this.
It's been great. And listeners, if you're listening to this talk and have any questions, don't hesitate to get in touch with us here at Optometry New South Wales ACT by phone, email or SMS. Full details are on the contact page of our website, optometry.org.au. Thanks for listening.
This episode of Optometry Talks was brought to you compliments of Optometry New South Wales ACT.